welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson recording this on the afternoon of Thursday, the 3rd of May, 2018. I'm back at my very special tide pool here, Wa'awa'a, near off the coast of Pahoa in the Puna district of the Big Island of Hawaii. This is a very interesting and special show. I'm recording this. I'm preempting the show that I was going to do about what seemed like the weaponization of the natural disaster, the storm that created massive flooding with record rainfall on Kauai 2 weeks ago. But it's all been superseded by an amazing confluence of volcanic activity here on the Big Island just in the past 2 or 3 days. So I wanted to tell you about that, and unfortunately, I can't send video footage on the radio, but with my accompanying blog post, I can share so much cool stuff. But just right in the past hour, people have had to start being evacuated from an area called Leilani Estates. This is near the town of Pahoa. Where I'm actually staying is probably about at least 15 miles from there as the crow flies. So we're safe, although today I did feel a 4.6 quake at 10:30 this morning. It kind of shook the house a little bit. But see, you have to understand, we're on all of the Hawaiian Islands are volcanic, and there are some of the hugest mountains in the world that they say Mauna Loa is the largest mountain in the world, and Mauna Kea is the tallest, because if you count from the bottom of the ocean where these come up, they're, you know, they sort of dwarf. Mount Everest just fits down inside them, if you count from the seafloor. So Kilauea, which is the name of the one of the five volcanoes here on the Big Island, Kilauea is the most active volcano on the planet. And it's a shield volcano, and it's known for relatively gentle, slow eruptions, not the explosive blowing into the sky thing like Mount St. Helens, but more sort of like lava. You know, it might come up, and there have been fountains here of lava. There was one in 1959 that shot lava, I think, 1,000 feet into the air, so that would be pretty spectacular. But theoretically, anything like that can happen at any point, but they've been monitoring. This major eruption of Kilauea has been going on since about 8 or 10 years ago. And when I came here in 2013, 2014, I was really hoping to see the lava flowing into the ocean, but a few months before I got here, it stopped because of the collapse of a lava tube. A lot of this is underground. And then a few months after I left, it started again. And then since then, in between 2014 and then again in 2016, they had a lava flow coming down what they call the 61G route that came within 100 meters of the actual town of Pahoa. And then it stopped. And so this is the first time today. It's the first time since then that lava has been coming down that close to this populated area. But this time, it was surface flows coming to Pahoa about 2 years ago. But this time, it's mainly been underground, and then it's coming out down near what they call the geothermal station. So we went there. As soon as we learned of it this afternoon, my friend and I tried to drive there to see it. But, of course, they've got all the roads blocked off, and they're trying to get all the people to evacuate those housing developments. I think not so much because of the lava itself, because of possible gases and fumes coming up with the steam. But I'm sure they probably err on the side of caution. But it's an interesting vibe here now. But there has been probably over 300 earthquakes of significant size in the past 72 hours. But Kilauea is not the only volcano here. It's huge. It's where Volcanoes National Park is. But it's got many sub-craters. You've got the giant Kilauea crater that's probably 10 or 15 miles across. And then if you look down inside there, it's got kind of a flat floor. And then there's what they call the Halemaumau crater. That's the one that's been filled with lava the past week or two. And that's when me and my friend were up there on Tuesday evening, we were able to see, after it got dark, giant fountains of lava shooting up, which we're looking at a line of sight 1.2 miles, but it's hard to tell. It could have been between 50 and 100 feet, these fountains of lava just jostling up into the air. And what looked like bolts of lightning, but it's actually streaks of where the molten lava is showing through the cooler dark crust, looks like jagged lightning bolt patterns on the ground. So this is, and on this past Monday, a major event happened. The crater floor of Pu'uoa, it's P-U apostrophe U-O apostrophe O, Pu'uoa, that's another major vent or crater that's part of the whole Kilauea complex. It's about 10 or 15 miles to the east towards where we are. It has been filled with lava. It's, you know, it's a pretty good sized volcano in itself, but on Monday the lava floor collapsed inside there, and then yesterday, 2 days ago, the weather was so bad they weren't able to fly over it and get much of a visual inspection of down inside the cone. But yesterday it was beautiful, and they did. And oh my God, when you look down inside this volcano, it's like a cone. It's like the inside of a cone going down, gets narrower and narrower, but it looks like it might be 1,000 feet deep, and it's totally empty. And so where did all that lava go? That's like the big question now. And also the Haleakala level has dropped too, so it's, they can't map the underground structures. I mean, I think they know to a certain degree, but you'd think with all the high technology, earth-penetrating tomography stuff that exists, that they might be able to do some kind of satellite imagery and see some of these lava tubes and stuff. And maybe that does exist at some level. Maybe the military has that. But so you've got Kilauea with the Haleakala crater down in there. You've got Pu'uoa over to the side. That's very active. That's the main one where most of the fog and the emissions come from. Then you've got Mauna Iki, Mauna Ulu, and then you've got, these are all ones associated with the Kilauea complex. Then you've got a very old one over near Kona called Hualapai. Then you've got the two giant snow-capped ones, Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. And Mauna Kea hasn't erupted in about 1,000 years. That's the one that's got all the giant observatory complexes and stuff, including the Keck Observatory. Mauna Loa has an observatory, but it's got a lot of military stuff up in there. It last had a major eruption in 1984-85 that flowed to within 5 miles of Hilo. So there's the potential for all kinds of volcanic activity here, but right now it's actually threatening some populated areas. It's going quite slow, but you know, it's very interesting. But my friend Wally, who I'm staying with, a few days ago handed me, he's been showing me updates in the newspaper about the volcanoes, and he handed me a couple of videos to look at, and when I realized that they were actually VHS and not DVD, I wasn't able to watch it. But so I found the photographer named Mick Kalber, that's K-A-L-B-E-R. I looked up his website, and I go, oh my God, this dude's doing some crazy stuff, flies, a lot of it's done footage shot from a helicopter. But as it turned out, Wally actually knows this guy. They used to be neighbors a few years ago. I haven't seen each other in a while, but I got in touch with Mick and told him what I'm doing and asked if I could interview him for my radio show, and he tried to put me onto the helicopter people that they're probably slammed right now, but if I could trade them some hand-painted rocks to go up and get an aerial view of some of this stuff, that would be really cool. But so his website is called tropicalvisions.com, video. He used to be the cinematographer for PM Magazine. He was in the television industry in Southern California, but he's been doing volcano photography for like 30 years. But I'm going to be catching up with him. But actually, he lives in Leilani Estates, so hopefully he's not over there having to evacuate his house right now. My friend Kenny, really cool bloke I've become friends with here, he's hiked on almost every trail up in Volcanoes National Park. And we on Tuesday, we tried to go up to the summit of Mauna Kea, but we got stopped at the 9,000-foot level at the visitor center because it was closed due to a blizzard. It was like minus 15 degrees. Not sure if that was Fahrenheit or centigrade, but it was still quite chilly and windy and covered with snow. So we hung out at the visitor center, but then we went to the down towards Volcanoes National Park and went up this road that goes about 10 miles up called the Mauna Kea Overlook. And there we were in this cloud forest, and it was cloudy, but it was a beautiful mist, beautiful silence and birds and plants, and very, very magical and enchanting and tranquil. But then it was getting dark, and Kenny goes, "Oh my God, the glow from the volcano was huge." And so we went to the Jaeger Overlook at Volcanoes National Park, and it was just going off, way more lava than I've never actually seen lava down in there before. 4 years ago, you could see the glow, but you couldn't see the lava. But this time it was just like going like 100 feet in the air. And it's just been there was a million people there. They had people directing traffic and all this stuff, just a madhouse. And then the crater floor collapsed on Monday. And Mick's been giving me an update every day. I haven't talked to him today yet, but posting the videos on his Facebook page, Tropical Visions, and his website, tropicalvisions.com, and his still photographer named Bruce Aromi. His website's called extremephotos.com. These guys go up together in the helicopters, and they're friends with all the USGS volcanologists. The team is headed by Christine Pierce, I think her name was. I might be trying to get in touch with her. So apparently, since this just went on the international news a couple of days ago, all the volcanologists in the whole world are coming here now. Very interesting time to be here, but interestingly for me, I'm cutting my visit here short. Not fleeing the volcano, but I really do want to get back down under. And I've been ready to get back down under for a while, but my Australian visa was just granted about 3 days ago. It took almost 3 weeks for it to come through, which is what they're saying the processing times are now. But so that came through, and then today I priced my plane ticket to fly to Sydney on the 14th of May, which gives me about another 10 days here. And that'll be time to wrap up all the artwork I'm doing and stuff. And I'll be really glad to get back down under. But, I mean, who knows where all this volcanic activity is going to lead to. I mean, it's a pretty major... It looks like the beginning of a pretty major chapter of volcanic activity affecting human population here. So Pele is going to do what she does. But it's very interesting to be here. But also, in addition to the volcanic stuff here, the Big Island has the largest complex of astronomical observatories in the planet, up on top of Mauna Kea. And I've contacted the public relations director for the Keck Observatories, and she's really cool, and told her about my interest in comets and how they let me go into the Anglo-Australian telescope in the Warrumbungles and record on my flute and how good the acoustics were. So she put me onto a bloke who's an instrument designing astronomer, but I talked to him today. His name's Mark Cassis, K-A-S-S-I-S, but he said, like, "Jeff, you know, who you really need to talk to is my boss, Greg Doppman," or something like that. And so I'm going to contact him. But this guy's like the head of the instrumentation department, and they're actually building a near-infrared spectrometer to study a comet called Wirtanen, W-I-R-T-A-N-E-N, a comet that's going to be probably visible to the naked eye for several weeks in mid-December of this year. And it has a period of 5.4 years, so it's no stranger, but it's passing within 30 lunar distances of the Earth. So they're going to try to study it. I don't know if any probes are going to go there, but there's this comet and two more that are on these comet research teams are getting ready to try to get as much information as they can from these high-resolution telescopes because it'll be so close. They'll be able to learn a lot just from optical imagery. But this is very, very interesting. And if I'm able to do an interview with any of these researchers, Greg Dottman or any other people they might be able to put me on to, I'm going to ask them about Comet Encke, which is the one who's, they believe it was a fragment of Encke that actually created the Chuxpilla impact in the Yucatan 65 million years ago that triggered what became the extinction of the dinosaurs. But it's very interesting. Now, the question, I'm sure, it is begging itself, with all my quote-unquote conspiracy theory ideas about geophysical warfare and tectonic warfare and artificially generated earthquakes and artificially engineered storms and cyclones and flooding and fires and all this stuff, I really think that's real. I'm sure of it, although I haven't witnessed it myself. I mean, I think I have. I mean, I haven't seen anybody turn the knob and press the button and then the weird weather happens. It's more complex than that, but I feel certain that those technologies exist and are being deployed. Now, people might ask, well, Jeff, could this volcanic activity have anything to do with geophysical warfare? And to be honest, it's not impossible. But I have to say that this does seem to be within the pattern of normal volcanic activity, no matter how extreme it might be. It's not abnormal behavior for Pele and all the volcanoes on the Big Island. But people can think of it any way they want and attribute this or that to it. But it's a very powerful and interesting time to be here. Volcanoes, they say, the authorities that I've read say that the Big Island has grown in land area something like 500 acres in the past few decades. Or, I mean, you know, I might be misquoting the exact statistic, but it's a significant amount of new land that's being created as the lava flows down over towards the ocean and stuff and goes out into the sea and it cools. And literally what we're seeing, what's so cool about active volcanoes is we're seeing Mother Earth giving birth to new land. That's what the lava is. And it's just so interesting. And the lava flows all, like if you look at where all your veins of precious metals are, like for example in Tasmania, there's this big swath called the Reed Volcanics. And in it is all the most concentrations of the special things that the mining geologists covet. All your precious metals like gold, and silver and platinum and other metals and stuff like that. These all tend to occur in lava flows. And so, for whatever reason, I mean, I guess lava could be made of molten anything. And I guess the composition of lavas, I mean, here on Hawaii, they have two kinds of lava. They got the pahoehoe, which is the chunky, rough stuff that forms, and then you've got the a'a, it's a apostrophe a. The a'a is the smooth kind that looks like pancake batter that sort of spread out and then it just kind of dries and stays there, and it might crack, but it forms really cool patterns. So that's the two different kinds of lava here, and they're probably largely made of basalt, but probably contain varying amounts of all different kinds of other metals. But all the lava, like where I'm sitting right now, I'm sitting on a piece of lava down at the beach, and it's pretty black. There's not much red in this, but there's, Mick Calvert said that the ash plume coming out of Pu'u'ola was red, and that it was putting a coat of red ash on everything that made it look like Mars. So that would probably be, red tends to be substances that contain a lot of iron. So the geology of the Big Island and of the volcanoes, and if you just look at a geological map, which I'll include in my blog posting for this show, a geological map of the Big Island is a very beautiful piece of art, just like the geological map of Tasmania that I travel with. The one I was going to buy a hard copy of the Big Island map, but it's so big, it's not one map, it's three huge maps, and so that would be a really cool thing to have. But just as a piece of art, it's very beautiful. But when you look at all the different lava flows and all the different substances that they consist of, you know, and I was asking my friend the other day, would any lava that came out of the same vent, would it always have a similar composition? Or maybe vice versa, that the lava coming out of the same place at different times may be totally different. I mean, I guess when you consider the complexity of the underground plumbing that we partially know about but largely don't, and how that's constantly changing, and then, you know, a lava tube can collapse, or some lava might be really thick and it blocks it up, or it cools and it blocks a tube, and then that makes it, it stops it up like your toilet getting backed up, and it makes the big vent, the big crater on top, start filling up with lava until it finds another way out, till it overflows or another tube busts through. That's the kind of stuff going on. And it's really it's quite unpredictable too. Like for several days the USGS has been saying, well, we're pretty sure the chances of another outbreak are high, but where, in which direction, it's going to be impossible to know until we actually see some come out, and then we can gauge from there. So when I go back and go online to upload this show later tonight, I'll be able to check and see what they're saying about the potential direction of this flow. But my guess is that it's going to be flowing down from where it is towards the ocean. Partially because I think it mainly, just like water, magma tends to follow the gravitational path of least resistance. You know, it'll flow down through gorges and valleys and stuff rather than over, it'll go there rather than over the top of a hill. And people have actually tried making barriers, concrete barriers, and using bulldozers to pile up big walls of rock and dirt to divert the lava from around their property. And I think that, in certain instances that's actually worked, but I mean, you can't stop it. And there's I've seen videos of lava that came up around Kalapana here 10 or 15 years ago that, I mean, the people stayed at their house and the lava was literally like 10 feet from their house in the backyard. And they stayed there and it stopped. You know, so now they've got their house and a frozen lava flow, like right, you could step out your back door and step onto it, you know. So there's people that'll stay, but they won't let their escape route get cut off, you know. So it's not the kind of, I don't think anybody's panicking, but there may be a degree of, you know, people that have to have, they might have to move out of their house for a while, but that would be quite stressful, having to leave most of your stuff there and not being allowed to go back. So, you know, in a way, we'll see what unfolds here. I'll do one more show here next week before my flight to Sydney on the 14th. But I can't think of anything else to share right now. I should probably go back and get this show uploaded. But I'll keep everybody posted on what's happening with this day by day via my email. And, yeah, volcanoes are really cool. I've been on the, what they say is the third most active volcano in Chile, called, well, the white man, the European name is Villarrica, but the Mapuche indigenous name is Rucapillan. That's Rucapillan, and it's near the town of Pucon, Pucon, Chile, where I lived there for like 6 months in 2006. And it's, you could see, I never saw lava coming down the side, but we did hike up to the top, and you can look down and see the active crater down inside there. They had smoke coming out. And I believe that Kilauea is the most active, Rucapillan is the third, and I think the second most active, according to, you know, the statistics, is Mount Etna in Italy, I believe. But there's heaps more, you know, there's like a... This, my friend Jenny Musco from Melbourne, she's in Indonesia right now with her dad, and I told her of this. She's actually going to the island of Lombok, where the volcano called Ranjini is there, and it's active, and it's really spectacular looking. It's like a giant cone that the side busted out, and it all flowed down into this giant lake, and then there's another small, well-defined cone down in there. But I think you kind of walk up the side of this giant thing, and it's a little like a giant crater that's been blown out, sort of like and the other volcanoes where I spent the most time is the Ruapehu Tongariro crossing on the North Island of New Zealand. And I've been to White Island, New Zealand's only active volcano, off of Whakatane. I've been there twice. So I love active volcanoes. They're really, really cool. I actually sort of fell in love with them in 2005 and recorded a song called Volcano. But It's Mother Earth, and I really think that there's energetic tie-ins between the energy of the rainbow serpent, the telluric currents in the earth, what's happening in the heavens with the sun. We're at what they call a Maunder minimum of the sunspot cycle right now. But my friend was showing me an outbreak of a solar flare today, I think. So it's really interesting thinking of the true, not the military version of geophysical understanding, but the true meaning of a geophysical understanding of the cosmic context, the universe that we live on, and our beautiful planet Mother Earth that lets us have such a beautiful place to live. Anyway, I'd better go and upload the show. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. Stay tuned to your dial. This is Volcanic Update. All right, over and out.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Question everything. Intelligent radio for intelligent people. UCY.TV.